And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, and with me is Phil Conlon. How you doing, Phil?
Good afternoon, Phil.
Cold.
Happy New Year.
Yeah.
Well, it's a cold world, so it's cold in Toronto.
It's appropriate.
And,
Today on the program, we're going to be talking to Thomas Mountain. He is in Eritrea and has written an article, as you won't be surprised, the December 30 Counterpunch. If you go to that site, counterpunch.com, you'll find an article by Thomas Mountain. Roughly the title is, Where Did Angelina Jolie, How Much Did She Pay for the Babies She Adopted? And he links the issue of adoptions. He says donations, you donate money and you get children. Also to her role as allegedly an expert on refugees, and her recent call on President Obama to attack Sudan, something I can't get any summon any enthusiasm for, but he's very, so that's a topic that we expect to be talking to Thomas Mountain about. By the way, he's going to be, we should all be appreciative, he stayed up until, staying up till 1 in the morning to talk to us. Later on, I think Phil and I will talk about the news from Gaza and the anti-war, the anti-aggression against Gaza, and the movements led by organizations like Code Pink and Viva Palestina. By the way, you can go to vivapalestina.org if you want to catch the latest news on the internet. And of course, you should go to GazaFreedomMarch.org. These are our favorite sources, and they have daily news and developments. It's basically good. It's a struggle, but it's very interesting. So we'll be talking about that later in the show. You can write to us, taylor@ciut.fm, and you can check us on the web at taylor-report.com, where our previous programs, most of them, are available, together with some scribbling, as it used to be called. And by golly, I think we have Thomas Mountain on the phone. Are you there, Mr. Mountain?
Yeah, how are you?
Very good. Hey, thanks for staying up. And you wrote an article for the December 30 Counterpunch, and by the way, a previous one, October 22, 2000, and addressing the issue of celebrities and their involvement in campaigns to rescue Africans, as broadly speaking, you started with the point that Angelina Jolie has adopted a child from Ethiopia, and you said that the way that is done is through what they call donations, but it's, you suggested maybe that a way to raise money, but you linked that to her, also her calling for Obama to send the troops to Sudan. How did you come to put it in just that form?
Well, see, there's been the Ethiopian government, bunch of gangsters that have been running Ethiopia now since 1991 with the U.S. support. They've been selling babies in Ethiopia. Some of the babies still have families. People are, just massive famine in Ethiopia now, and some people choose to sell their children to survive. And so the government there, you know, they sell babies, and they call it adoption, but you pay $30,000. It's cash you pay. And maybe $1,000 of that gets back to the family of the baby, but you know, it's been a huge income for these gangsters that they're socking away into their Western bank accounts. Some reports say as many as 3,000 babies a year are being sold in Ethiopia at $30,000 a piece. But the thing is, Ethiopia is the U.S. policeman on the beat; they're the local enforcer in East Africa. So pretty much anything they want or they want to do, gets approved by the United States, because they're there to do the dirty work for the U.S. and the Western powers, which they've been doing. So, you know, right now, the early article I wrote was about Darfur, and, you know, was talking about busting the Darfur genocide myth.
Yes.
I'm in Asmara. Much of the Darfur resistance leadership is headquartered here, has been here for years. And, you know, we've never heard them say there's a genocide going on in Darfur, not the ones that are really genuine leading the Darfur people. Darfur is actually, the Darfur refugees have been the recipients of the largest, best-run aid, relief aid program in history. There's no genocide going on in Darfur. The genocide's going on in the Ogaden in Ethiopia, where the Ethiopian government is running they call it a counterinsurgency campaign. But what they've done is they've kicked the Red Cross out, they've kicked the Doctors Without Borders out, and they blocked almost all the aid to the country during one of the worst droughts in history. And these are ethnic Somalis that live there in the Ogaden. So we're saying, you know, there is genocide going on, but it's not in Sudan, it's going on in Ethiopia. And yet, here you've got Angela Jolie coming in, buying a baby in Ethiopia, and then turning around and saying, oh, the U.S. needs to declare war and start attacking Sudan. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, it's like, wait a second, you know, I said it's like you buy an African baby and then bomb some African villages? What's going on here? It's Holly Weird, you know?
Yeah, Holly Weird.
People don't. Yeah, it's what it is. It's Holly Weird. They don't know what they're talking about. They're you know, there's this big propaganda campaign, Darfur, 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 and they're raising, what, over $100 million on behalf of the Darfur people, and yet you're lucky if 10% of that gets spent in Darfur. It's going into the pockets of these so-called human rights groups and NGOs. Mm-hmm. And these Hollywood celebrities who don't know what they're talking about jump out and say, oh, genocide in Darfur, genocide in Darfur. When Angelo Jolie paid $30,000 at least for that baby, she's supporting the Ethiopian government, which is carrying out genocide. And then she's turning around and blaming the Sudanese government, which are cooperating and trying to, you know, run the best aid program in history in Darfur. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the thing is, see, people just don't know what's going on in this part of the world.
Well, by the way, yeah, you're in Eritrea, and it was... there have been successful peace talks held there, and I'm not aware of anybody reporting them, right? I mean, that the rebel groups and the government of Sudan met there and came to some agreements.
Well, there's an expression in this part of the Africa. It says all roads to peace run through Asmara. I'm in Asmara. It's, you know, there's a long history of the Eritrean government trying to, you know, build peace. We want peace to break out in this part of the world.
And you got a long way.
Eastern Sudan, the you know, the peace deal was brokered here in Asmara. For Southern Sudan, the whole process was started here in Asmara. Even the Darfur deal, the was brokered here in Asmara. You know, they even tried to get the Somalis to reunite their country and bring peace and stability to Somalia. You know, which was actually starting to happen until the Americans sent the Ethiopians in to destroy it all. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and yet we've got sanctions against us. There's genocide in Ethiopia, and they're putting sanctions on Eritrea? I mean, it's just too bizarre.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. Wait, now, could you just give a timeline on it? When did the sanctions come in, and in the name of what?
Well, the Americans are, the Western powers, especially the USA, is hell-bent on seeing Africa in a state of continual chaos. And, you know, the Western countries mainly, Western powers have been gradually kicked out of most of the rest of the world, South America, the Middle East, and Asia. The only place they can rape and pillage still is in Africa. So if there are strong nationalist governments, like here in Eritrea, they can't do that. So what they want is they want all this chaos and war going on so they can come in and get the diamonds, get the gold, get the oil, and exploit the continent. And so, mm-hmm. you know, they don't want a united government in Somalia. So what they've done is they've sent the Ethiopians in to invade and destroy any chance of peace and unity. They've Americans literally have dumped hundreds of tons of weapons in Somalia to keep the Somalis fighting each other. And then this has all kind of backfired on them, and the Somalis are, you know, kicked the Ethiopians out, and now we're trying to, you know, they're fighting against this puppet government in Mogadishu. And so they've looked, and Americans are looking for a scapegoat. So who do they blame? They blame Eritrea. I mean, they say Eritrea is sending weapons to Al-Shabaab, and Al-Shabaab is linked to Al-Qaeda. And this is, you know, it's all a lot of propaganda in the first place. They don't need any more weapons in Somalia. There's just so many weapons in Somalia now, nobody needs to send them anymore.
Weapons
and
are
secondly,
us. Yes.
And secondly, how is Eritrea going to get weapons to Somalia? The Americans and the French have got this big military base in Djibouti, which I wrote a big story, another story about this African command base and what a fiasco it's turning out to be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they've got this, all these naval forces off the coast of Somalia looking for these pirates, which I wrote another story about, linking the Somali pirates to the Ethiopians and to the American government.
Yeah.
So there's no way the Eritreans can get arms to Somalia without it being intercepted and interdicted by the Western powers and all these naval forces. So it's all lies. The Eritreans want peace. We don't want war in this part of the world. And yet, you know, because the Americans are trying to cover the fact that they've been doing all these terrible things and have got these really screwed up policies, they want to turn around and blame Eritrea.
Yeah. Well, by the way, on that point, to remind our listeners, we're speaking to Thomas Mountain, and he's in Eritrea. And we're very glad
we're Eritrea, yeah. You know, they like to say we're some kind of a police state here. You know, it's everything you read about this country is completely opposite of what I experience every day. I live in a very peaceful, tranquil place called Asmara, Eritrea.
Yeah, but
you know, sometimes
the Western powers would like to fix that if they can. did you see today's? I don't know if you're aware. Today's New York Times is carrying a long op-ed piece advocating an alliance with Puntland, as that's how you pronounce it. Saying they ought to go Puntland should be the foothold for civilizing the region. Are you aware of this concept?
Well, see, Puntland is basically, you know, Somalia has been broken up into Somaliland, Puntland, the area around Mogadishu, and then the area around Kismayo, the port in the south. Now, Puntland has basically been run by some warlords who are supported by the Ethiopians. And, of course, Ethiopia is the largest recipient of Western aid in Africa, in sub-Saharan Africa, and also has the largest, best-equipped army in Africa, while millions of their people are starving. So Ethiopia's got military bases still in Puntland. So the Americans are saying, okay.
They didn't mention that in the article.
No, they don't mention that, and they don't mention the fact that all of these Somali pirates are coming from Puntland. Okay, now, the one question nobody seems to ask is how come there haven't been any cruise missiles and smart bombs whistling down on these Somali pirates after they scuttle ashore with their money? Okay, they get this millions of dollars ransom, they come ashore, how come they haven't blown them up? They've got real-time predator drones flying around with real-time videos that can see these guys. They know exactly what house they're going back to, and there's been no retaliation against them. Why is that? Because they're running back to these Ethiopian military bases and sharing their loot with the Ethiopian gangsters, and these are American allies. So the American kind of let the French or whoever, you know, to come and bomb their allies.
Yeah.
And they just, how come they haven't bombed any of these pirates?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the point is that, you know, there's a lot of things going on here in this part of the world where I like to say, you know, black is white and up is down and right is wrong. Everything is turned on its head, and a country like Eritrea that's trying so hard to bring peace to the region is being punished, while Ethiopia is carrying out all these crimes against its own people and against its neighbors, and they're being rewarded with billions of dollars in aid.
Stock is going up, and Angelina Jolie is one among their admirers. I want to ask you about her. She is a United Nations so-called goodwill ambassador, and I noticed that she gets that appointment. She got it during the Bush administration, by the way, which means that Bush approved of that. But she's under the United Nations Human Rights Refugee Commission. And so has she ever said a word about the refugees in the Ogaden Valley?
Well, yeah, she's actually supporting the Ethiopian government, you know, cash donations. I mean, she doesn't care about the people in Africa. She's some sort of Hollywood actress that I don't know where she's getting information from, but to call upon Western powers to come in and invade Sudan? I mean, when has Western intervention ever brought peace and helped anybody? Military intervention, you know? I mean, it's just all they do is come in and create chaos and death and destruction. So, you know, peace is slowly breaking out in Sudan, mm-hmm. and now they want to come in and destroy it all.
Yeah. So well, like, also, I don't understand how someone with a title like that can involve herself in an argument with the head of the government. Not that there's a big distinction, but it's curious to me that she can get headlines lecturing Obama about how he ought to go into Sudan, and she's got this title. UN, as far as I know, UN personnel don't go around getting in arguments with heads of state.
Well, you know, in Mogadishu right now, the UN-supported African Union troops are regularly shelling Somali neighborhoods and killing hundreds and hundreds of Somali innocent civilians in retaliation for when the Somali resistance attacks them. And what do? The Somali resistance come in with hit-and-run mortar and attacks, and they shoot a few mortars into the so-called peacekeepers' base and leave. And then what do the peacekeepers do? They shell the civilian neighborhoods just out of frustration and retaliation.
Collective
they say,
punishment.
You know, they're not peacekeepers, they're peace killers. How can the UN be supporting a military force in Mogadishu that's killing innocent civilians in the name of peace?
Yes.
Well, so the UN is actually, we say out here that the UN is there to enforce the law of the jungle.
Mm-hmm.
And the law of the jungle means only the strong survive. And, you know, and the survivors have to, if they don't kneel down at the master's feet, they have to be made a lesson of. You know, Noam Chomsky likes to say that U.S. foreign policy is like that of the mafia, that if the smallest shopkeeper doesn't pay protection money, they have to be made an example of. Their shop has to be burnt out and they have to be destroyed. Well, we here in Eritrea, we won't kneel down and pay protection money. Yeah. So, you know, it's like, so we're being punished. And, you know, the U.N. is like an arm of the United States, mm-hmm. especially out this part of the world. There's very little difference between these UN agencies and the CIA so many times. They have a name, they have a title, they pretend like they're doing good things, and when you really look into what they're doing, most of the time they're doing dirt. They're really doing bad things. Yeah. I mean, I can tell you stories about the World Food Program. People think they're feeding the hungry. It's actually, they're using food as a weapon. I mean, you know, when you talk about the UN, we kind of have to say, wait a second, you know, maybe there are good works being carried out by some UN people someplace, but in this part of the world, oof, the UN's got a really dirty track record, and it's little more than an arm of the United States government, and this latest sanctions against Eritrea really, you know, establishes that.
Yeah, and by the way, that's a Security Council exercise, right? I mean, that doesn't come, of course, from General Assembly. It's not the other, it's
no,
not,
it's
the
Security
peers.
Council. It was a closed meeting. They did a secret meeting and passed this resolution, you know, condemning Eritrea. It's like, wait a second. You know, what's going on here?
It is a little like the mafia.
Mm-hmm.
I got to ask you, and this is Thomas Mountain, and I, by the way, and I really recommend it. You get to go to the December 30 Counterpunch article about the linking the Angelina Jolie adoption story with her advocacy of an attack on Sudan, which is blood-curdling. What about the... there are African states. They do meet. Eritrea is represented. I assume that Eritrea is being heard there.
The thing is, you got to sort of take a look at a kind of a bigger geopolitical question. See, because Africa, like I said, is the last sort of place that the West can pretty much do as they please. I'll give you an example. Nigeria and Angola, they get about 8 or 9% royalty on their oil. In other words, if this oil is going for $75 a barrel, they're getting like about $6. And that's not partnership, that's theft. I'll give you another example. Anglo-American Mining Company, one of the largest mining companies in the world, operates one of the largest gold mines in the world in Tanzania. Yep. And they pay Tanzania a 5% royalty. Gold's $1,000 an ounce. Tanzania gets $50 and Anglo-American gets $950. But that's not partnership. That's not aid. That's not development. That's just plain theft.
That sounds
like Canadian
piracy.
Company. Yeah, you have a Canadian company called Nevsun that's about to open a gold mine here in Eritrea in the end of this year. And the Eritrean government is getting 40% of what they make on this mine. Not 5%, 40%. Uh-huh. Now, how's Europe and Canada and the United States going to maintain their high standard of living if they can't come in and rip off Africa? And if Eritrea is getting 40%, then the people in Tanzania are going to say, how come we're only getting 5%? So this is like a threat of a good example here.
Yes.
And, you know, the rest of Africa is pretty much run by warlords and gangsters and very corrupt people. And, you know, their economies are dominated by Western businesses and the Western financial institutions like the World Bank and IMF. Eritrea is not. So it's sort of that when the master whistles a tune, you got to kind of jump to their dance to their tune. And that's what you're seeing in these other African countries. You're seeing countries like Uganda that have become dependent on Western aid for the government's very survival, turning around and saying, oh, they're sending soldiers to Mogadishu and their soldiers are shelling innocent civilians, killing innocent civilians, and turning around and saying, Eritrea is supporting terrorism in Somalia. And, you know, never mind evidence, you know, never mind common sense or anything else. It's just, as long as they say it, then it must be true. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like after a point where it's like they don't have to provide any evidence. They control the media and they can just say what they want. And I guess my article is like one of the few articles actually coming out and saying, you know, wait a second, there's another side to this story. What's really going on?
Yes.
You know?
Well, I listen. Thank God for Counterpunch and the fact that it gets circulated. I'm sure you had thousands of readers who were very glad to see that article.
Well, you know, I've been also having a series on a website called onlinejournal.com, mm-hmm. and I've been actually writing about the good things that are going on here in Africa, especially here in Eritrea, like how they've reduced malaria mortality by 85%, how Eritrea is the only country in Africa that's reduced AIDS infections rate by 40%, according to Physicians for Peace, mm-hmm. how we're fighting global warming here through soil conservation and water conservation. There's some really positive things going on here that nobody hears about. All we hear about is the terrible things in this part of the world.
Yes.
And, you know, it's like there's a role model here. People, you know, if we can reduce malaria, it's a huge problem in Africa. Malaria mortality by 85% in the last 5 years.
Yeah, malaria is the number one. I've worked
more
in Tanzania.
More than AIDS. It kills more people than AIDS.
Of course.
And yet we've been able to, in Eritrea, they've been able to reduce it by 85%. How do they do it? How come this isn't a role model that's held up for the rest of the world? You see what I'm saying?
Because they
they turn around and put sanctions
percent.
On
us? Yeah. Oh, by the way, that's onlinejournal.com. Your article can be found there?
I have a series there that's
online.
Been running since onlinejournal.com. Yeah, I'm not sure just how their search engine works, but you need to put Thomas C. Mountain in, and there's a whole series in there.
Yeah.
There's an article about what I call Ethiopia Gate, which is the aid to arms diversion that's going on in Ethiopia. It's been like $20 billion has been diverted over the last 10 years or 15 years by Ethiopia, that the money that's supposed to be feeding starving people is actually going to build a huge army.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got an article in there about how the Americans are building this $6 billion base in Djibouti for their African command.
Ah, the magic word. Could you talk about Djibouti? I don't think that's something I've always felt needs to be understood here. Djibouti is one of the great ports and potentially a source of tremendous wealth for Africa. And the people living there, running the place, as far as I know, are the U.S. and the French. Am I right?
Well, Djibouti is pretty much a colony of the West. Yeah, there's like 500,000 people there. And they've got their own internal problems. They've got this big drought going on, and a lot of the people are starving there. And, you know, the government's living like kings.
It is a port, right? It's one of a deep water
port. Yeah, it's
port,
but it's actually, the port itself is Eritrea used to be the port of Assab, and Eritrea used to provide Ethiopia's imports. But when Ethiopia tried to recolonize Eritrea about 10 years ago, that port got shut down, and they had to move to Djibouti. Now Djibouti's, the port's so overburdened, ships are sitting there for 3 weeks trying to unload grain. And, you know, but it's like the only place that would allow the Americans to come in and establish their African command. The rest of Africa, in any place that's strategic, said no. But, you know, right now, the story that's getting a lot of attention is Yemen. Because
yes, just Yemen across the water. They must be staging.
Part of the Horn of Africa, you know?
They must be staging some of this aerial activity. Must be coming from Djibouti, right? The bombing.
Well, but you know, one thing that hasn't come out in the Western press is that there's a U.S. military base in Yemen, on the Hainish Islands. They have an intelligence base with a small naval presence there, and it's been for years now one of Al Qaeda's main recruiting points is that we're letting the Americans use our land for a base to attack. They're using it, and they're going to attack other, you know, our neighbors. Mm-hmm. So this is something that hasn't come out, but you know, Yemen is in the midst of a civil war. The Saudis are intervening now because the people they support were losing. Now the Americans are coming in and trying to claim Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda. I mean, you know, the Horn of Africa is going up in flames, mm-hmm. and Americans are coming in and dumping gasoline on it all and saying, oh, we want peace in the area. And, you know, we got a year from, I mean, 6 months from now, Kenya's holding an election. Mm-hmm. And the last time they held an election in Kenya was a huge, I mean, civil war broke out.
Yes, people.
But the killing was going on with knives. Now these Kenyan tribal groups are buying weapons, and in 6 months when they hold what they call an election there, there's going to be a major bloodletting that's going to go on. I mean, the one place that's like tranquility and peace here is Eritrea, and it's the one place that's being punished with sanctions.
Yeah, and it would be assumed that the U.S. and Britain have to do the right thing and intervene and help out.
Well, you know, every time the U.S. comes in and says, oh, we're trying to do something good, it ends up being, you know, they've got ulterior motives. And I just, I really have to question anything they're doing. I mean, you know, Yemen's the latest flashpoint, but I just see this whole area in here is like, you know, the thing is, the Horn of Africa is very strategic because 40% of the world's oil is supposed to pass the Horn of Africa. The U.S. has got Ethiopia there as their enforcer, you know, Ethiopia invaded Eritrea in 2000 and took Eritrea's land. They had a final and binding border demarcation, and Ethiopia just said, no, we're not going to accept it. And there's supposed to be sanctions against Ethiopia for refusing to accept this border demarcation. And no sanctions against Ethiopia for that because they're our enforcer here.
They're on the right team.
The U.S. enforcer here. Instead, they put sanctions against Eritrea.
And by the way, it's mismatch, right? I mean, you point out Eritrea has, what, 3.5 million?
4 million people. Ethiopia's got 80 million. Ethiopia's got a million-man army. It's got the largest, best-equipped army in Africa. And that's another big secret. How come the West isn't talking about that? How come this huge, all this billions of dollars in aid they give to Ethiopia? I mean, Ethiopia gets $2 or $3 billion a year in aid and loans that they never have to repay. And yet their people are starving. There's polio and tuberculosis is endemic in the country. And yet they've got the largest, best-equipped army in Africa. Nobody even knows that in the West.
You're right.
I mean, why are we giving them money? To what? To feed people, and yet they use it to buy arms? And then the American government continues to give them more and more and more, and nobody even, the press doesn't even talk about the fact that not all this aid that's being illegally diverted to arms purchases, how can they get away with all this? Where's the media? Where's the press? You know, they talk about the free press in the West. They don't even talk about these things. And it's just like, wait a second, it's common sense. How can Ethiopia have the largest, best-equipped army and be one of the poorest countries in the world?
Common sense will get you in a lot of trouble.
tell me about it.
Just to underline the transformation that's gone on in Djibouti, that was French. It was like a French colony, and it used to be the Foreign Legion was there, but now it is a major U.S. I think U.S. Marines are there, and the Foreign Legion. But has there been some?
Americans are building a three-phase base in Djibouti. Each phase is a $2 billion installation. The first phase is getting completed. They've got another $4 billion to spend in Djibouti still. It'd be a huge military base there. And they're, you know, wait a second. How come this, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, we have a base in Djibouti. Wait a second. $6 billion installations going in there? And, you know, now they're saying, oh, Eritrea and Djibouti are having problems. Well, the Americans are telling the Djibouti government, you've got to get the Eritreans away from the border because the Djibouti is kind of a narrow strip of land, and it's the military base the Americans are building is all within 50 miles of the Eritrean border. And Americans woke up one day and looked up and saw in the mountains overlooking Djibouti the fact that the Eritreans had said, this is our territory, and they put their military there to make sure that nobody come in and take more Eritrean land. Mm-hmm. The Americans realized if the Eritreans wanted to, which they don't, and they don't want to pick a fight with Americans, they could put our artillery up there and control the whole military base.
Uh-huh.
But I mean, the Eritreans aren't going to do this because they don't want to. We don't want a war with America.
They've got enough problems.
The Americans are like, oh, they send the Djibouti troops to attack the Eritreans and drive them off. And the Eritreans pretty much finished off the Djibouti troops, and now they turn around and UN Security Council demanded Eritrea withdraw from their own territory. What? You're telling a country they have to withdraw from their own territory? Eritrea just ignored them and said this is a joke. So they're using that as one of the excuses for why they got to put sanctions on Eritrea. Think of America, big American military base in Djibouti is coming, being built as we speak, and nobody even knows about this.
Yeah. Now, by the way, that's a very interesting. All that construction and all that planning was long before the Yemen came on the screen as a problem. So, it's interesting how they say, "Oh, we've discovered a problem in Yemen," but they must have been planning a problem because they were already building these billion-dollar operations there.
Well. You know, like I say, the Horn of Africa is very strategic. 40% of the world's oil passes through, you know, the Red Sea and the Horn of Africa. So control of that oil is very much in the mind of the U.S. elite that runs, you know, and the Western elite, because who controls that oil has got a lot to say about what's going on in these other people's economies. So, I mean, that's why they're putting that base there, really, because of the strategic nature of the Horn of Africa. And that's why they're really worried about what's going down in Yemen. But they're not just worried about what's going down in Yemen. I mean, Yemen's in the midst of a civil war. They're worried about, you know, they're worried about Kenya. They're worried about, especially Ethiopia. I mean, Ethiopia's got not just one insurgency in the Ogaden. They've got a low-level insurgency in Oromia, which is half the country. They've got a serious insurgency in the north in the ethnic group amongst the Tigrays. And you know, the Americans are very concerned that Ethiopia could become a failed state. And so, you know, they're sort of doing some pretty desperate things. I mean, it's pretty crazy the way they're responding to these problems instead of trying to bring peace to the Horn and stability and keep more failed states from developing. They keep pumping weapons and arming these gangsters and warlords, and that's just going to lead to the collapse of all these countries.
Yes.
So it's like, wait a second, doesn't somebody in Washington, D.C. realize just what a disaster they're creating on this part of the world?
Mm-hmm. Well, by the way, they obviously do. In one respect, you've written in the October 22nd, I read it in Counterpunch, the busting the Darfur myth. I mean, they knew very well that the issue there was to you had groups that were armed by somebody and attacked the Sudanese government. And the question was, can you get those parties to cease fighting and compromise on some type of government, and they turned it into a big debate about whether or not there was genocide. But meanwhile, there was actual political progress on the ground. They don't talk about that.
Yeah, I mean they don't want to. We have cable satellite TV out here, and I remember even watching an old show of Boston Legal. And they were talking about genocide in Sudan. I mean, it's like, wait a second, there wasn't any genocide. We had the largest, best-run aid operation in history. You've got an international police force there working closely with the Sudanese security forces that have pretty much ended all the violence in Darfur. And yet Angela Jolie and all these people are talking about, we've got to go in and invade and declare war.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the reality is there is genocide going on, and it's going on in Ethiopia. And yet Western aid is being pumped in the billions of dollars to keep the Ethiopian government in power and to enable them to continue this genocide.
Yeah.
So it's like they're covering themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's Western aid that's funding this genocide in the Ogaden. So instead of dealing with that, they make a smokescreen and say Darfur.
Yes.
When there's actually not genocide in Darfur.
Yeah.
But see, Sudan is a black Islamic country. I mean, what more could you ask for to have an evil enemy to attack? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think exactly. One assumes that profile really helped the propagandists. By the way, of course, I'll say again, we're talking to Thomas Mountain, but we've kept him up very late in Eritrea. Going right back to the original point about this thing of adopting children, and what's the Eritrean policy on that? Do people come to Eritrea thinking that they can make a donation and take children out of the country?
No, that doesn't happen here. For one thing, there's very little corruption in our government. So, and the Eritrea is very fond of the children here. They're trying to. We've been through so much war and even genocide against the Eritrean people back when the Mengistu regime was occupying Eritrea, that they're trying to rebuild the population here. So, mm-hmm. You know, if we do have orphans, but they're trying to.
They're not for sale.
The policy is to have them adopted and raised by their family, extended family.
Yeah, you put your finger though on it. That is a very sensitive thing. I think most onlookers are very really kind of tired of watching Hollywood stars go into Africa, take a child, and have their picture taken and leave. It leaves a bad taste,
And, you know, some of these kids have parents that are alive still.
Yes.
But these parents sold rather than starve to death, they sold their kids. Yeah. Wait a second, isn't that sick? That people have to sell their kids rather than starve to death, and these Hollywood movie stars come in, and because they got a lot of money, they can buy a kid?
Yeah.
It's like, wait a second, don't you know? Maybe that kid's got family. Did you even check to see if that kid's got family? Maybe that kid's family is starving to death.
Mm-hmm.
That your aid money that's supposed to be helping make sure these people don't starve in these droughts is going to a military.
Yeah.
You know? And then and instead you're turning over this money to these gangster government and they're using it to commit genocide? What's wrong with these people? You wonder. You know, it's like, you know,
speak about all those things, that one bad policy leads to another, where people we find ourselves having to watch Angelina Jolie talk about what should be done in Africa when she's already set a bad example. But fortunately, there are people writing about this, and Thomas Mountain is one of them. And I got to say again, we want to make sure people go to this. It's onlinejournal.com. And it could slash probably Thomas Mountain and find you, right?
Well, Thomas C. Mountain, but I'm not that much of a whiz on using their search engine. So
yeah.
People a little smarter than me maybe can. I'm not always that lucky finding my own.
I'm counting on the more advanced elements in our listenership. But I know they can.
Yeah,
they'll be able to find you.
Counterpunch has also had a couple of good articles. The Darfur one, now this one about what's really going on in Ethiopia, and. Hopefully there'll be more, there's people, the Horn of Africa is coming into attention. In the past, it's been, Horn of Africa is something that people, people can't even find Eritrea on a map, most people in the West. So, we're getting some attention, but it's mainly for bad things. And, there's actually a lot of really good things going on, at least here in Eritrea, some really good things. I'm living in a little country that's one of the most, disaster, both man-made and natural, ravaged countries in the world, and in one of the most underdeveloped countries, and yet, the World Bank uses words like remarkable to describe life expectancy increases in Africa, in Eritrea here,
mm-hmm.
I'll give you an example, a comparison. South Africa is praised for its democracy and all these other things. Mandela was released from prison in 91, Eritrea was and the apartheid regime was changed. Eritrea became independence in 91. South Africa today, every day, 3,000 people die from AIDS. 3,000 a day die from AIDS in South Africa. Life expectancy, when Mandela was released from prison and came to power, was about 62 years in South Africa. Today it's down to 48. And yet these guys, the South African government is praised as a democracy and a role model to be held up. Yet the country is just in the midst of this terrible scourge epidemic and homelessness and hunger and violence. And yet Eritrea is like, we're feeding our people, we're preventing AIDS, we're preventing malaria, and yet we're being sanctioned.
And you're at peace. You've committed the biggest crime. You have a peaceful circumstance. I mean, everybody in your neighborhood has got fire coming off it.
And you know what? And Eritrea was independent in 91, and it wasn't in 98 the Ethiopians decided they wanted to recolonize Eritrea. But in that 7-year stretch of peace, Eritrea had the fastest growing economy in Africa, and we weren't taking any money from the World Bank or the IMF.
The rest of
Africa is up to their ears and hawk the World Bank and IMF, and their economies are falling apart.
Yes.
And yet Eritrea is not taking money, and we're doing the best. What does that tell you?
It tells us a lot, actually. No, that's a really profound observation. We're very grateful. Keep up the good work. We look forward to each of your articles. You've been writing wonderful things.
Is this interview going to be available on your website?
Absolutely.
Because there's a lot of Eritreans in Toronto.
Yes. And a lot of Somalis, by the way, who I know are
listening. Yeah, a lot of Somalis.
I've been getting
a lot of email from not only Somalis, but from Ethiopians from the Ogaden, Somalis from the Ogaden. You know, there's a film, if people are interested, there's a film called Silent Cry, which people can check out at silentcry.co.uk. And it basically was made by a group of high school students from Britain who went to visit their family in the Ogaden and had some video cameras and got there and found themselves in the middle of a genocide. And they made this film. And it's like, it's about the only thing really that people can check out about the real genocide that's going on in the Horn of Africa now, in the Ogaden. Silentcry.co.uk. You know, and my best goes out to the Eritrean and the Somali community in Toronto, and I'll be posting up when you get this, where they can go look to see this interview that they missed, because I don't think a lot of them knew it was going to be on the air tonight for you guys. So I'm sure a lot of them will want to come check out your radio program.
They definitely are, and they are all grateful for the writing of Thomas Mountain. We're really grateful, and hope we can talk to you again soon.
Sure thing, anytime. Thanks a lot for having me on.
Okay, bye-bye. Okay. Thank you. That was Thomas Mountain, and he is... You can find him in the December 30, 2009 Counterpunch, the article where he speaks about Angelina Jolie and her war policy and her adoption strategy. And also in the October 22nd, 2009 Counterpunch is where I read the article titled Busting the Darfur Myth. Both of them excellent articles, and he has just told us that you can go to onlinejournal.com, and of course I know that you're all gifted enough that once you get to onlinejournal.com you will then be able to find Thomas Mountain. He's in Eritrea, and that was a lot of information.
Phil, I was doing some little simple arithmetic there. That's a major industry in Ethiopia in trading in human flesh. We're talking about a $90 million industry, or that kind of industry.
$3,000 a year.
That carries political clout. So you now have like a whole infrastructure of human of flesh trade, right? Which is what we used to call slave markets in the United States, and it's this is a little different in some ways, but it fundamentally, it's buying and selling human beings.
It's like a lottery for a family. It's horrible. Poverty has always produced this situation. Wherever you have dire poverty, you have people buying either children or human parts. We have a lot of that, by the way. There's a huge market in human parts, and there are people who we see pictures of given kidneys, etc. Not pretty, but you know, I mean, that to me, he really filled in a lot of blanks.
Yes,
Eritrea was a peace broker in Darfur, and the reward for that is they're on the list now of countries that the Security Council is unhappy with.
Well, also this business about the pirates. I mean, he just filled in some details.
Read the story
of course,
the days
because it's really being incomprehensible. If these pirates are so what the Americans say they are, how come the Americans haven't done anything about it? And of course, now he's explained why they haven't. They don't want to do anything about it.
Yes, they operate out of Puntland, according to Thomas Mountain. Mm-hmm. I have no reason to think he's wrong. He says that, and that's my understanding. And Puntland has always occupied a rather special place, and particularly a warm place in the hearts of Washington and London. And it is part of Somalia, but it's a broken piece of Somalia. But today's New York Times has, I would call it a very worrying, that's why I asked him that question, is a very worrying thesis about, well, why don't we go in and help and ally ourselves openly with the government of those governing Puntland. And, you know, you think, ah, yes, the Foreign Legion, the British and the Americans in Puntland, that'd be helpful. I would call that consolidation, based on what Thomas Mountain is saying, because they're already there, because the Ethiopians are there. And the Ethiopians and the Puntland rulers are working hand in hand. Of course, he also emphasized this thing about the Ethiopia in the Ogaden, where those people are Somalis. Ethiopia has been allowed to pretty much do as it pleases without anybody explaining how come. They get to cross borders, they get to have the biggest army, and they get all that dough from Washington. I would think Thomas Mountain's article is very helpful on that. He's quite right, by the way. We have a very large community here of Eritreans, Ethiopians, right. By the way, who are not admirers of the...
You will meet a lot of Ethiopian immigrants in Toronto who are really refugees, and yet we don't recognize it as a major refugee-producing country, but it is, and they are escaping what our correspondent referred to as a government run by gangsters.
Mm. Yes. Yeah. tell our listeners, yes, this is the Taylor Reports, CIUT 89.5 FM. You can write to us, taylor@ciut.fm, and you can check out our previous programs, just as today's program will be available online at taylor-report.com. And we'd like to hear from you a bit. And also, this is a story we'll be staying with. he produced a lot of interesting information. This business, but Tanzania sells gold at, what is it? I forget how much.
5% royalties.
5% royalty.
Yeah.
And all those countries, Nigeria gets $6 on a $70 barrel oil. That is, we used to call that highway robbery. By the way, we may as well, we take a there's a segue here. He raised the point about Eritrea became independent of Ethiopia in 1991, to the great displeasure of Ethiopia. And that was roughly the time of the Nelson Mandela's release from prison. And then he compared what has happened in those two places, where in Eritrea the AIDS rates have fallen, malaria rates have fallen, where there's a better life expectancy has increased. None of these things are true in South Africa. And South Africa has a serious problem, and really no question about it. And I have lived and worked in Tanzania. We'll be doing so again, as a matter of fact. And there is no romance of Nelson Mandela left. And to my mind, this new film called Invictus ought to be called Evictus, because he's fallen into the hands of Clint Eastwood, of all people. And the story is about how you have to unite with the white rulers of South Africa and then go merrily forward and accomplish something, which didn't happen. And that's known, actually. You really, if you're talking to an ordinary Tanzanian, they shake their heads. It's got to be faced. It's just reality. Clint Eastwood made his career, shooting dark people and cursing them and being a cop who breaks the rules. Never been a friend of the struggle against racism. And he ends up being the guy who directs this. And, you know, I saw Morgan Freeman being interviewed about the film. He plays Nelson Mandela. And the interviewer named Tavis. I forget his name. I can't do the whole name. At any rate, on the black television
network. He said, well, what's it like? You met him, you know. And he said, well, you know, he's because he was great to me, and you met a great hero. And he says, you know, you and I call him a hero. And he says, but when I met him and I talked to him, he says, half the time he tells me, he feels he's a failure. And, why not credit that? This is me now. I'd say, well, maybe he is. It's not his fault. You know, he's part of the struggle. He did what he could do. But if everybody's going to say, oh, what a great success, this is getting to be a little bit embarrassing. When folks like Eastwood are making films about you, it's a good sign that you maybe didn't climb all the way to the top of the mountain, and that's your fault. How many of us are going to get there? But to me, it ought to be faced. Struggle to this type need to cast light on this phenomenon of what has happened there in South Africa. Now, again, I want to make sure. Last week on the show, we talked to Sandra Rush, and we were bringing the news. We spoke to Daniel Heap, I think it was. No, Daniel Heap. I keep trying to turn the poor man into David Heap.
David Heap from London, Ontario.
He said he gets that a lot, right. And I did it to him again.
He was in Cairo trying to get to Gaza with a large group of people from London, Ontario.
Yeah, 11 people from London. Yeah. Well, the news is that some have gone. Mm-hmm. There's some still demonstrating they're in Cairo. And, of course, there's also the news of George Galloway's. He has a convoy. Mm-hmm. And the convoy has reached Egypt now. They went the long way around. They went to a Turkish port, and they were negotiated through the Turkish port to a port in Egypt where the vehicles had been unloaded from a ship. Now they're going to fly the people from the convoy back and forth until they get but they've been given permission, as far as I know. The vehicles are going to go. So, viva George Galloway. He's been successful. He made it. Some of the, not all, have those who went to bring solidarity through Cairo. Some of them have gone. But there was an issue was, can they all go? And they were unable to have all of them go. I was just speaking to someone in New York. There was a big demonstration in New York today organized by a group called, I better get it right, and since I said that, I can't find my note for it. But anyhow, there's a demonstration in New York in support of the Gaza effort. GazaFreedomMarch.org is one of the places you want to go for news of this. GazaFreedomMarch.org, VivaPalestina.org, and that's the George Galloway convoy. On the Galloway site, there's a good letter I recommend everybody see. I don't have a copy of it here, but from Noam Chomsky congratulating them. And since this is a delicate issue of, you know, is it a success? What do people think about the tactics? Chomsky's basic assessment is, he says, this is all to the good. Nothing comes off perfect. There's been glitches and whatever. My guess is it probably came off better than if it had been perfectly organized, and it might have been a perfect failure. But since it wasn't perfectly organized, it was a mixed success. But at any rate, there's a very good article, a good letter by Noam Chomsky, congratulating them. So those are the sites. Viva Palestina. I want to make it something else. VivaPalestina.org and GazaFreedomMarch.org.
Phil, is there any news about Hetty Epstein, the woman who was the Holocaust survivor who was doing a hunger strike in Cairo?
My understanding is that there are more than one hunger strike going on.
Yeah.
We hope she's doing well, I hate to say I don't have news. I don't want to create anxiety, but I know that at GazaFreedomMarch.org you'll get the answer to that. But I noticed just before coming to do the program, I checked the notes at that site, and there was a reference to
hunger strikers, so there's more than one.
More than one.
A lot of rather well-known people who are there, by the way. And my goodness, this thing of blogs and the internet, you can read people's diaries, and diaries are fun, you know, where the guy says, well, it's 3 a.m, and we're sitting at a stairwell, and we're arguing about what our position is going to be tomorrow, and we're the Anarcho-Pacifist League of West L.A., and we just had a meeting with Mark Rudd or somebody. No, Mark Rudd's in Arizona, but at any rate. And you say, he's there or she's there? It's great. It's terrific. You can really keep track of things. And you won't be a prisoner of the official information crowd, which is Thomas Mountain warned us about. I mean, how can it be that you have a mess like the Ogaden Valley, crushing of Somalis there, no news, the scandal of donations to a government in order to remove children? You have to listen to the Taylor Report or go to Counterpunch or personally, you know, Mr. Mountain. You have to go to the mountain. Another film I want to recommend, and a film reviewer. There's a man, Atson. His name is Gilad Atson. He's a musician, a very prominent one. And he does, and he has a review in Counterpunch, but he is also at gilad.co.uk, and he's reviewed two films that are, I'm told, are, well, one of them I've seen, but one is Avatar. He's an advocate of Avatar. He thinks it's got a lot of great message in it. But he also reviewed A Serious Man, and I recommend that film.
Film.
I particularly recommend his review of it. He's a brilliant guy, like many people with a, he's got an, I'd call it esoteric, unique point of view, and because of the internet, you don't have to worry about passing through an editor or publisher, you just go straight to him, and that's gilad.co.uk. What do you think? Have I pronounced that right, Gilad?
I guess.
Is that a soft or hard G?
No, it sounds... No, I would be a hard G, I think, yeah.
A hard
yeah.
G, Gilad.
Yeah. Sounds like a place in the Bible.
Yes.
Missing a vowel, but that has a hard G, so we'll...
Yeah, what is the line from the Bible?
There is a balm in Gilead.
Is there no balm?
There is a balm in Gilead, and there's a song that Paul Robeson sang, which we should play, because it is a wonderful... It's a wonderful song.
Well, we dial it up, exactly.
Yeah, we'll look for it on YouTube. For listen to Paul Robeson sing "There Is a Balm in Gilead." That's a very inspiring song. Yeah.
And in the moments left to us, and by the way, this is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5, taylor-report.com, and you can write to us, Taylor at CIUT.fm. We've just had 4 Canadian soldiers killed, together with an embedded reporter, and their bodies have returned home. We are told that there's a rhetoric involved here, which is troubling in my view. First of all, there is an expeditionary force. There's a talk about a war. We're not in a war. We have an expeditionary force. It is assisting in a NATO operation. Afghanistan is actually not within the purview of NATO, but there you go. Our job is to debate policy and not to just stand and salute or say we're sorry. We are all of those things. But if you're actually a living human being feel responsible for yourself and the rest of your community, you're supposed to be talking about these things. Should we be involved in a NATO adventure or one driven by the United States, or should we not? That might be important. And if you're going to say that democracy and freedom are being represented there by NATO, you might want to explain to me why we have had a proroguing of what we call our parliament. I think prorog, in my view, is just a fancy word for mugged. We got mugged. Now, Canadians are being killed, and the Governor General tells us that she's had a phone call from the Prime Minister, we won't have our parliament at a time when this ought to be debated.
Second time in a year. Yeah.
Well, my impression is he wants to be president.
Yes, President of Canada. Prime Minister.
Yeah. He's not too impressed with this, with the parliamentary system. Yeah. Laura Louise has been very good with us as usual and got us all this done for Phil Conlon, Phil Taylor, Taylor Report. Thanks for being with us, and see you next week.